Chapter 13. Therefore indeed, Gallos, since he could see no further signs of revolution in Galilee, returned with the army to Caesarea. But Cestius decamped with his entire force and entered Antipatris. And when he learned that a considerable force of Judeans was gathered in a certain tower called Aphek, he sent men on ahead to engage them. But before it came to hand-to-hand combat, anxiety of them thoroughly scattered the Judeans. But after coming upon their deserted encampment and the surrounding villages, they set them on fire. But Cestius proceeded from Antipatris to Lod, where he seized the city empty of men. For on account of the festival of booths, the whole multitude had gone up to Jerusalem. But the 50 of those who did show themselves, he utterly destroyed. And after burning down their town, he resumed his advance. And he went up through Beth Horon and encamped at a certain place called Gibeon, 50 stadia away from Jerusalem. But when the Judeans realized that the war was now drawing near the metropolis, they abandoned the festival and took themselves to arms. And taking great confidence in their multitude, they sprang forward into the battle in disarray with a great shout. They did this without any consideration of the seventh day rest, for a Sabbath was certainly their most important religious commitment. Now the fury which had shaken them out of their piety made them also strain for the battle. Accordingly, they attacked the Romans with such passion that they tore through their ranks and advanced through their middle, doing away with them. But had not both the cavalry and part of the infantry, which was not becoming desperately weary, supported the slacking phalanx by wheeling around, Cestius, with his entire force, would have been in danger. Now 515 of the Romans died, 400 of which were infantry, but the remainder, cavalry, while the Judeans lost only 22. Now the Judeans considered their most noble men to be both Monobas and Kenadios, who were relatives of Monobas, the king of Hadyab. After them, Niger the Parian, as well as Silas the Babylonian, who had deserted from King Agrippa to the Judeans, for he had served in his army. Therefore, when the Judeans were indeed repelled from the front, they returned to the city. But Simon, son of Giora, attacked the Romans from behind as they were ascending at Beth Horon and mauled much of their rear guard. And he dragged off large quantities of the baggage train, conducting it into the city. Now, while Cestius retained his position for 3 days, the Judeans seized the heights and kept watch on the access routes. But clearly, They were not about to remain idle once the Romans began to move. Now Agrippa, having fully recognized that the Roman situation was not free of danger, while a countless multitude of their foes was occupying the mountains, decided to subject the Judeans to a trial by words. For either he would persuade all of them to desist from warring, or he would cause the part which was not in agreement to defect from those who were arrayed in opposition. Therefore, he sent to them the most conspicuously notable men whom he had with him, both Barchi and Phoebos, and promised them that Cestius would both give them his right hand in pledge and a sure pardon from the Romans for the offenses they had committed, if they would throw down their weapons and return to them. But the insurgents, becoming anxious that the entire multitude, in the hope of amnesty, might return to Agrippa, rushed to do away with his sent elders. So they indeed utterly destroyed Phoebus before he even uttered a word. But Barchi was wounded, yet able to run ahead and escape. But any of the populace who were indignant at this, they herded back into town, striking them with stones and sticks. But when Castillo saw that their disturbances against one another afforded him an opportunity for a strike, he brought up his whole force. And after he had routed them, he pursued them as far as Jerusalem. Now, he encamped on what is called Scopos, which is 7 stadia away from the city. But for 3 days, he made no attempt on the city, expecting that those inside might make a quick surrender. But in the meantime, he dispatched many of his soldiers into the surrounding villages in order to plunder their grain. But on the 4th day, which was the 13th of the month, Huperberatios, he drew up his army, leading it into the city. Therefore, indeed, the populace was kept imprisoned by the insurgents. But the insurgents themselves were struck with astonishment at the Romans' orderliness. Indeed, they abandoned the suburbs, while they withdrew into the interior city and into the temple. But when Cestius had passed into the city, he set fire both to Bethesda, also called the New City, and to what is called the Timber Market. Then, when he had come to the upper city, he encamped opposite the royal palace. And if, at that very hour, he had been willing to force his way through the walls, he would have instantly taken the city, and the war would have been terminated at once. For instead, both Tyrannios Priscos, the camp prefect, along with most of the horse chiefs, had been corrupted with money by Florus. So, they dissuaded him from the undertaking. And it was certainly for this reason, both that the war lasted so long, and that the Judeans were filled up with irremediable calamities. Now, many of the most notable men of the populace, having been persuaded by Hanan, the boy of Jonathan, kept calling Kestios, saying that they were going to open up the gates for him. But again and again, he kept coming to the verge of acceptance, but never did. And this was partly because he disdained them in his anger, and partly because he did not entirely trust them. This lasted until the insurgents perceived the betrayal. Indeed, they threw Hanan's party off the wall and, pelting them with stones, they herded them into their homes. But they themselves positioned themselves at intervals on the towers while they bombarded those who were attempting to scale the wall. Therefore, indeed, for 5 days, the Romans maintained their efforts from every direction, but the assault proved infeasible. But on the following day, Kestios, taking with him large numbers of both the picked men and the archers, began making attempts on the temple's northern side. But the Judeans kept blocking them from the portico and repeatedly repulsed those who had reached the wall. But finally, the Judeans, driven back by the multitude of projectiles, withdrew. Now, the Roman vanguard wedged their oblong shields against the wall, and those who were behind did likewise, placing theirs down upon these in a series. And so, they secured what they call the tortoise, from which projectiles, as they fell, glanced off without effect. Now the soldiers, suffering no injury at all, continued undermining the wall and preparing to set fire to the temple gate. But terrible anxiety seized the insurgents. Now many of them were already running out of the city in the belief that it was on the verge of being captured. But it happened that the populace was encouraged by this, and the more wicked men relented the closer they approached the gates, with the intention of opening them and welcoming Kestios as a benefactor. Accordingly, since Kestios had not comprehended either the despair of the besieged nor the state of mind among the populace, he suddenly recalled his soldiers. And having renounced his hopes, he most astonishingly decamped from the city without a single blow. But at this unexpected retreat of his, the brigands, having regained their courage, sallied out against those at the rear and utterly destroyed large numbers of cavalry and infantry. Therefore, indeed, at the present, Kestios passed that night in his encampment at Scopos. But on the following day, by separating himself further, he invited his foes to follow him even more. In concentrating their force on the rear, the brigands began to utterly destroy them. and distributing themselves on either side of the road. The brigands kept hurling javelins at their flanks. But supposing that some countless multitude was chasing them, the Romans at the back did not have the courage to turn themselves toward those who were wounding them from behind. Indeed, because they were weighed down by their arms and were anxious about breaking ranks. But because the Judeans were lightly armed and ready for sudden raids, they refused to stand fast to repel those who were putting pressure on their flanks. The result was that the Romans suffered considerable injury without inflicting any retaliatory harm at all on their enemies. But all along the road, they were continually hit and shaken out of their phalanx and falling down. So many were disposed of. Indeed, Priscos, the army chief of the 6th Legion, but also Longinos, a tribune, but also Aemilios Jucundos, the prefect of a swarm of cavalry. So after abandoning the bulk of their equipment, they, with difficulty, finally made it to their former camp at Gibeon. Indeed, Cestius lingered here for 2 days, at a loss as to what he should do. But on the third day, when he observed his foes in much greater numbers, and that every place in the vicinity was filled with Judeans, he realized that he had loitered against his own interests, but that if he continued to remain any longer, he would have to deal with more enemies. Now, in order that he might deal with a more focused escape, he gave orders to cut away whatever was impeding the army. Now, both the mules and donkeys, but even the beasts of burden, were utterly destroyed, with an exception of those which transported the projectiles and the machines. For these, they carefully preserved, both on account of need, and especially because they were anxious that these weapons might be captured by the Judeans and used against them. Then he led the force toward Beth Horon. Now, since the Judeans indeed applied less pressure in the open spaces, but the Romans had become crowded together into the narrow spaces and the descent, those Judeans who had gone ahead indeed blocked their egress, while others drove those at the rear down into the ravine. But with the whole Judean multitude strung out above the neck of the road, they kept coating the phalanx with projectiles. And here, since the infantry was at a loss as to how to assist themselves, the predicament was even more precarious for the cavalry. For, while being bombarded, they were unable to proceed down the road in military order, and the ascent up to their foes was unfit for horses. But on either side were cliffs and ravines into which they fell and were obliterated. And there was neither a place for escape nor a plan for defense. Instead, they, utterly at a loss, were reduced to wailing and lamentation in their despair. But in response, encouragement sang out from the Judeans, along with a yell from those who were rejoicing and were enraged. Now, they almost carried away the entire Roman force, including Cestius. But night intervened. Indeed, at this time, the Romans fled into Beth Horon. But the Judeans, who had occupied every place in the vicinity, kept watch for their egress. At this place, Cestius, now despairing of the clearly visible road, was taking counsel concerning his flight. So he singled out about 400 of the most courageous soldiers and placed them on the roofs of the houses. Then he gave orders for them to keep calling out the watchwords of the encampment guards in order that the Judeans would be made to believe that the entire force still remained in that place, while he himself took the remainder with him and stealthily proceeded another 30 stadia. But at daybreak, when the Judeans perceived that the Romans' quarters were deserted, they rushed upon the 400 who had deceived them. Indeed, they quickly shot them down with javelins, but then began to pursue Cestius. But he had made considerable gains during the night, and now that it was day, he was fleeing even more quickly, to the extent that the soldiers, in consternation and anxiety, abandoned both the city destroyers and the sharpened bolt launchers and the majority of their other weapons, which the Judeans then took and immediately began using against those who had left them behind. Now they advanced, pursuing the Romans as far as Antipatris. Then, failing to overtake them, they turned around, beginning both to gather the machines and to rob the corpses. They also collected the spoils, which had been abandoned. And with songs of victory, they ran back to the metropolis. Indeed, the Judeans suffered only a few losses, but had done away with 5,300 infantry of the Romans and their auxiliaries, as well as 480 cavalry. Therefore, this defeat indeed happened on the 8th of the month, Dios, in the 12th year of the command of Nero.